gentlemen, may I have your attention?
Comunidad, welcome to another episode of Latina, Latino, Latinx News. My name is Alexis Terrazas, editor-in-chief of the legacy San Francisco-based community bilingual newspaper, El Tecolote. On December 26, 2021, Juan Pablo Gutierrez, a trailblazing figure in San Francisco's Latino LGBTQ community, died after a two-year battle with MDS. He was 68. Juan Pablo's death was mourned by many. For decades, he spearheaded San Francisco's Dia de los Muertos ritual and procession, and was among the first openly gay directors of the Mission Cultural Center. Hailing from Austin, Texas, Juan Pablo arrived in San Francisco in 1982. Once here, he established many long-lasting connections and friendships. One of those friendships was with Linda Wilson, who started El Tecolote's Photo Archive. In early January, we had a chance to sit down with Linda to reflect on what her friendship with Juan Pablo meant to her. Linda, thank you so much for being here with us today. And my first question, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm okay. I'm a little disoriented. I think when you lose someone you're very close to, you do feel like you get a little frantic. You know, grief comes out in different ways. And I feel a little disoriented, kind of, you know, just so used to calling him every afternoon. So I can't do that. So, you know, when watching lots of movies. But I think I knew that it was time that he was leaving us.
Tell me about your friendship with him and when that started.
Well, Juan Pablo and I met in the 80s. There was a lot of people don't know this. There was a friend that we both had named Carlos Anzaldúa. He came from Texas. And he was a very amazing filmmaker. And he had been to Yale on a big scholarship, and he was the only Latino there. And he did a film called It's a Dictatorship, Eat, which is in many, you know, archives and collections of short films with political twists. And he was very unhappy at Yale because he really missed the culture, the Latino culture, terribly. And so he came to San Francisco. He thought he would like that. And I met him at the Aguiari, where I was a volunteer. You know, we were all a collective cooperative. And he was really fascinating person, but I could tell he didn't really find San Francisco that Latino either. And he met Juan Pablo. And actually, I met Juan Pablo through him. I mean, we all sort of got together, and Juan Pablo was trying to show him the nice things in the mission, but he really, Anzaldúa, Pablo used to call him the bunny. He didn't like it. You know, he liked his enchilada sauce differently. He liked his, you know, and it was very sad. And so I rented a place to Carlos upstairs. And then he was good friends with people at the Galleria too, Sal and everybody. And he just decided that he had to go back to Texas very abruptly because he really missed his family. And so then I had an empty apartment upstairs. And Juan Pablo called me and asked me if he could move in, and that's really how it started. Because I really didn't know him that well. I knew of him. But then after that, it's like we just started doing things together and going places, and this was an amazing time, you know. And Juan Pablo used to auctioneer for these big fundraisers down at the farm, and he was a great auctioneer. He would raise lots of money. You know, there would be benefits for El Salvador, but different things would be going on down there. Big dances at the farm. And Juan Pablo would wear his hat, and he could really do that auctioneer thing, you know, with the fast voice and all that. And he was everybody's favorite auctioneer. And I would go down there and we would walk back and it would be so much fun. You know, he would just be so revved. And it was just, I never was as busy as Juan Pablo. You know, I was never as gregarious. He's a very gregarious person, even then. And he was very out gay, which was pretty important to him. And he, but he was very, very aware of the Latino culture. That, you know, he was just all the same thing to him. And so it was just a friendship that built up, but that's how it really started. I would say probably we used to go to the farm a lot at night because he would leave here from the house. And then as time went on, I started meeting more of his friends and he met more of mine, and we just got involved with different projects, you know?
And around what year was this that he moved into your apartment and you got to know him?
Well, this had to be, you know, I really don't know what year it was. It had to be the 80s. 81, I'm trying to think, in the 81, I went overseas and he wasn't here then. Maybe 83 or something like that. 84, early 80s.
And quick clarification, what was the farm?
The farm
was
a huge, big collective that was down now where the La Raza Park is on the other side of Potrero. And it was a bunch of artists who lived there in this beautiful old building. And it had a huge dance hall in it. And, you know, there was a big fight when they wanted to tear it down, but that's how we got La Raza Park, was by fighting over that. But, and they raised chickens and goats and ducks, and you could take your kids there. But there was a big building, too, like a community building. And that's where everybody went to big benefits at the farm. Yeah. It's, if you Google it, you know. Or what's his name, that guy who does alternative history?
Chris Carlson.
Chris Carlson has done a thing on the farm, yeah.
And I've been combing through the archives in Teco, and I've found the Revistas Literarias that he would write poetry in.
Yes.
He translated for us, and we actually, Juan wrote about when he became the director of MCC, Mission Cultural Center.
Yes.
For those who don't really know, and of course he, you know, for 40 years, right? This was unfortunately his last Dia de los Muertos ritual procession, this previous one. But for those who don't know who Juan Pablo is, like the artist, what can you say about the legacy, the impact
that he had? Because that's really the part I knew of Juan Pablo better than the Dia de los Dead procession, because I was never really involved in that in terms of, you know, helping out on it or being one of the main volunteers. But I was very active. You know, Francisco Alarcón and he were very, very close friends. And Juan Pablo and Rodrigo Reyes, who was a theatrical director, and a whole group of poets would meet here. And actually they had different organizations too. There were a lot of different organizations they started and worked on, books they did. But I always knew Juan Pablo more as a poet and an artist. You know, he could draw and paint. And he did these beautiful notebooks of these angel drawings. And we used to have, there was a big dance once that had one of his angels going up a wire or something on the t-shirt. I mean, he was a wonderful artist. You know, as he got older, his hands hurt him a lot and he couldn't really draw as well. But he could really draw with an ink pen. He was amazing. And he was like, well, you know, the thing about the mission, this is the thing about Juan Pablo, I think maybe people would want to know, is he, you know, when he was in Texas and he finished up his degrees, he started a cultural center in Texas and he started curating exhibits of Mexican photographers and artists. And a lot of those catalogs still exist, but he heard about Peter Rodriguez here in San Francisco and the Mexican Museum. And he heard that Peter Rodriguez was possibly gay. And yet still, he had this, he was doing this revolutionary thing to start the first Mexican art museum in the United States that we knew of at the time anyway. I think it was, actually. And that's really why Juan Pablo came to San Francisco. So it isn't like he just sort of came here with no dream. He thought, well, this may be a place I can come. And his dream was always to work at the Mexican Art Museum. But that never worked out. It was like, he became very close with Peter. And it was always his role model, was Peter Rodriguez. But he ended up as the first gay Latino director of the Mission Cultural Center, which just changed the whole thing at the Cultural Center. You know, I mean, he was so friendly and supportive. You know, people used to talk about coming to the Cultural Center when Juan Pablo was director and how nice it would be. I mean, Michael Roman used to tell me, you know, that when he came up there, it was Juan Pablo, you know, that hired him and found a place for him. And all this was, if you talk to people, they say, oh, I met Juan Pablo at the Cultural Center. And later they became dear friends. So he was known to be just a sort of lovely person to work with at the Cultural Center, and lots of fun, and very open to all mediums. So, and he worked well with Rene Castro, the Chilean graphic artist, who's such a maestro, and they worked very well together. Juan Pablo did the grants, and Rene did a lot of work up in the Graphica for other community organizations, and there was a good teamwork there. Because Juan Pablo also had great administrative skills that a lot of people don't know about, and was responsible for writing major grants for things here in the Mission in really all fields that I know of. Literary, health, bilingual things. I think he may have written some for Tecolote.
Now, you mentioned that he came to San Francisco looking to work with Peter, another giant in the yeah. arts. Did he ever talk to you about, you know, the atmosphere of being gay, openly gay in San Francisco during the 80s, you know, where, you know, the AIDS epidemic was, you know, claimed the lives of many, you know, did he ever talk about that?
Well, that came later. There's a little picture, see, behind you in a frame. See, you might want to look at that. But that is Juan Pablo when he was director of the Mission Culture Center at the judging stands for Carnival. And he went in this tutu. You see it with the...
I see, yeah.
And he had to go home and change clothes. And it was a terrible experience for him. Somebody from the board, I don't know anybody, but I know I was here, so I saw it. He was just... He was so upset, but he didn't want to lose his job. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it looked very festive, and people always remember that, but they don't know that behind the scenes, he was told to go home and put on a suit and represent the Mission Culture Center because it would be on TV. So, you know, that was a terrible experience for him. So it wasn't that easy for him or for Francisco. And, you know, Peter was not totally out. I mean, he was, but he wasn't. He was that generation. But Juan Pablo was, and Francisco was, and Rodrigo was. And they were really leaders in these different, like, poetry, you know, arts and teatro. So they were very much out. Mm. Yeah. And it, you know, I think maybe it was easier in San Francisco, but... You know, then when people started getting AIDS and dying, you know, Rodrigo was the first to die. And he died of AIDS and made that public. And there was a ceremony over at his place on San Jose, you know, where Yolanda lived and everybody, you know, lived over there. He lived over there. And they had live music and food, you know, where the body was there. And his sister came and attuned to the body. And it was like... a very, very traditional Latin thing that they did there. But Rodrigo died very fast. You know, and he had been so healthy and strong. And then it was really, everything sort of changed, you know. But Juan Pablo, And some of the others in these different groups he worked on and founded, you know, I'm not real good at remembering all the names of them, Vita things and stuff. They started all these funds and organizations. And Juan Pablo had an exhibit at the Galleria where he made these beautiful altars. I think it was a whole show about AIDS in the Latino community that Juan Pablo curated. And so he had this big purple net. He loved net, you know, and tulle and all that sort of stuff. He'd make these beautiful altars out of it. They were gorgeous. They were purple. And there would be these boxes. And it was a huge altar. It was at the Galleria for a long time. It was upstairs. In a room up there for a long time. I don't know where it finally ended up. But there are photographs of it in books and things.
As the podcast of the community newspaper El Tecolote, we think hearing from you is important. So please leave us a comment, rating, and share our podcast to other members of the community. Thank you. Since you're listening to this show, you might also like another podcast called Civic. They're also produced by a local newsroom, the San Francisco Public Press. Civic is the go-to show for understanding how things work in San Francisco and why they don't. They talk about what's going on in the city and the Bay Area with everyone from activists to city officials, from researchers to your own neighbors. They'll ask the questions about housing, public transportation, climate, the pandemic, or homelessness. Questions that you might be too afraid to ask at this point. New episodes come out every Thursday.
You shared some really amazing photos of Juan Pablo and his childhood in Texas. What did he tell you about how, you know, how was life growing up for him on the border, you know, having to, you know, obviously being Mexican and American, you know, and Tejano even. How was that experience growing up for him?
Well, his father, who he really didn't see much of, knew a lot about building altars and rituals and things like that, you know, paper cutting. I mean, he learned all this as a child. I mean, you know, he was this master paper cutter, too, when his hands were really good. Amazing, you know. And he learned that from his father and from his family, you know. So it's, and then I think he also took these dancing lessons. You know, his mother, I don't know if you saw the pictures of him in his little dancing outfits and stuff. But she gave him all these dancing lessons, and he became a really good dancer, you know, in terms of Mexican folk dance. So he knew all this stuff, you know. And then, of course, he loved to cook, and he got some of that from his mother, but also from some other relatives. And he was like even in the end, he was a master chef. He would win all these contests in, you know, the best chile, the best mole, the best, you know, every year at these contests for years. He would always win because he was really good. For those who got an opportunity to eat a meal back in the day made by Juan Pablo Gutierrez, you know, you never forget it.
And I know he was somebody who was open about his own illness with AIDS,
yeah,
too. And I believe there was a fundraiser that was done that I think you helped do. Maybe I'm incorrect.
No, we all did. You know, that's interesting because that was showed you how this whole community, you know, can come together and did for Juan Pablo. Juan Pablo got very ill. He was up in general, and they were telling us that he was going to pass within a week or two. And then it was at that time in history of the United States and in San Francisco when they came up with the first cocktail. Now, I don't know the name of them because, you know, I don't want to say anything that's incorrect, but I know it was the first thing like that. And some people, it didn't really help. But they gave it to Juan Pablo, and really, within a month, you wouldn't have believed. Hmm. I mean, he was out of there and over at Cell Space on the board, living at Cell Space. I mean, it was just miraculous. But, you know, when he was dying, and we thought he was dying, and we didn't know what to do, and we had this fundraiser, and it's what what we call cell space now, which, you know, Carnival just bought, but, you know, or it's just retrofitting and everything, but it was huge. And it had these women who climbed ropes and did acrobats and stuff, and it was gigantic. And Juan Pablo had a little apartment up there, and so did some other people, you know. And it was, you know, it wasn't well organized. It was illegal, but they lived there. But they did, you know, and they created this whole board for it and everything. But we decided to meet because Juan Pablo was dying at General. And Francisco Alarcón and myself and, I mean, a lot of people. I can't remember who all was on that committee now, but we would meet at different restaurants here in the Mission, but it was a good group. And we got poets, we got writers, we got musicians, we got artists, we got bands, and we put on this amazing fundraiser that was very successful. Even that we got photographers to come that would take your picture in front of things, and then you would get the print, but you had to pay, like, you know, $25 to get your little Polaroid. And it was wonderful, and everybody did it, you know. and of course Francisco read, and all the poets in the Mission at the time read. And I remember Juan Pablo came, and he was only there for about, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I would say maybe I have photographs of it, you know, in my collection of photographs, but he was there for probably maybe 20 minutes max, and people couldn't believe it, and some other guys brought him over. I think Kevin Woodson was one of them, the one who's in Taiwan now, and they brought him over on a walker, and he's there, our pictures of him, but he's so frail. And we still thought that he was going to go, you know, and we were surprised, but he wanted to be there. And I do think it lifted his spirits. He couldn't believe that this place was just packed with hundreds of people. And it was, you know, and there was music, bands were going on, you know, salsa bands and people that, you know, were friends of people that these guys all came down and just did it for free, you know, to raise money. But he wasn't there long. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there long. And then he came back. He came back from that. Yeah. He's lived with it until the day he died, you know. Yeah.
What were those final days like, from what you remember? And I know, and my apologies, I know it's a rough question. I know it's really recent. But yeah, what were those final days like saying goodbye to him?
Well, you know, Juan Pablo and I have been friends socially, you know, and artistically and gossiply, you know, the chisma, you know, and all this stuff, you know, for years and years, because we go way back, you know, we had all these mutual friends that we've lost or that we love in Mexico or here, and so we've always stayed in touch, and we would have our little outings or our little dinners. He would come over here and cook. You know, because he didn't have a kitchen where he was living. So he's a master chef. So he would come over with a friend to clean up and bring all this stuff and then use my kitchen and leave me with all this incredible food. These were feasts, you know. So this is the kind of relationship we had, you know, these last few years. And then last spring, he started to get sick. And he called me and he told me that he was getting night sweats at night and fevers, and he was having trouble breathing, and he was going to go in the hospital for some tests. And I went up there to General, you know, with Mabel, and we went up because he was used to him to going into the hospital for tests and then going home, and because he'd been living with AIDS, you know, all his life since, you know, the mid-80s. So we just... But I felt something was different. I felt he acted different about it, too. And then they said that for some reason he was having a pulmonary lung thing where he was having trouble breathing. And also that his blood pressure was way down, that he didn't have any blood, that his body was not manufacturing blood. Now, I don't really know the scientific name for that. But that's what I think they never really knew. I still don't know. So it wasn't cancer. They don't know if this was a side effect of the drugs, the cocktails for AIDS, or of AIDS, or if something totally different. But so I just knew it wasn't the same. Mm-hmm. And he was never the same after that. He was weaker and weaker, and all the little fundraisers he would always do for Day of the Dead, and, you know, the raffles we would always give money to and get these gorgeous little gifts and things, didn't happen. And the grants that he usually writes, you know, they didn't happen. And I knew this, you know, and I told him, I said, you know, why don't you just not do it this year? Why don't you turn it over to somebody else? This is how it was for me. We still had our little gossips and our movie talk and our food talk. But more and more, he couldn't have an appetite. And my job sort of became in the early evening to call him and try and get him to eat. Mm. We would talk about certain foods. There were great restaurants. And, you know, Servio, from Back to the Picture, has this wonderful restaurant. He and his wife have a couple of nice restaurants, too, besides the framing shop, you know. And they would take him food up there, or he could go down there and get it. But he didn't have an appetite, and that wasn't like him. So I would talk to him about food, and then he would get hungry. And I would say, go across the street and get some sushi or get whatever, you know, even though it was expensive, just get it. But it, you know, I knew something was wrong. Because this is a man who fought to live. And this is a man who dealt with pain and dealt with physical problems all these years and yet got so much done. But I saw that this time it was really affecting him. So that affected me terribly. Because I didn't want to be telling his other friends, you know. I knew how much he can just rise to the occasion for things. And we used to call him the little fighter, you know. But so it was sad to see that go. You know, I always admired that so much. It was, for me, a great role model. Because we all struggle. You know, I have my own thing with my ataxia and my imbalance. And, you know, Juan Pablo would just say, who cares? You know, you got to go out and do these things. I mean, you know, it was just, he was wonderfully supportive to me. And I looked at him as a great role model on how to deal with a chronic thing, mm-hmm. and yet go ahead and create things. And he, you know, I would say this about Juan Pablo. The most important thing is he's one of those people in life who make things happen. And, you know, we all have roles in life, and we all, you know, have our place and belong in the world, but there are certain people who make things happen. They think about it, they organize it, they figure it out, they reach out, they just make it happen. Those doors just open because they are so sure that it can happen. And Juan Pablo, you know, he was one of those people.
Thank you, Linda. And my final question is, is there anything that you'd like to add? Maybe something I forgot to ask, or something that you'd just like to share about your friend Juan Pablo?
Well, maybe I would like to share just one thing, you know, because, you know, his mother was quite dear to him, and his mother lived here in the house. You know, maybe people don't understand, but he lived here in the house for a long time, off and on, you know, and Francisco Alarcón lived here, too, on the weekends coming up from Santa Cruz, and Luis de la Garza lived here, and just a lot of people lived here, you know. But mainly it was really Juan Pablo's place, so he was a steady one. But then his mother would come from Texas to cook for him when he was doing his grant writing. You know, there are cycles for grant writing in the arts and in community and all these things. And he had big grants to write for the Mission Cultural Center, particularly for the retrofitting of that building. And that was a miracle that he pulled that off. And he and Rene Castro, it was quite a thing. And they did it. And his mother would be here, and she would cook for him. And she was just this lovely person. And I got to know her. And we would go for walks in the mission. And we would go to little Chinese restaurants because she liked little wonton soup. You know, we would go to one, I think it's still there somewhere. on 23rd past Mission Street on the way to Valencia. And she liked it in there. And she always talk about her son. She's so proud of her son, you know. And then the time I do remember is there was an earthquake here. And she was staying upstairs with me because something was going on down here. I can't remember what. There are people here. And so sometimes she would stay upstairs with me. And she had her long white nightgown and her long braid, you know, the gray braid down. And there was an earthquake. And I got up and I found her on her knees. I mean, really praying, you know, and saying, tremble, tremble, you know. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, you know, she was just terrified, you know, as people from Mexico often are. And I didn't know what to do, so I ran downstairs to this flat where I live now and knocked on the door, and Juan Pablo felt it too. And I said, you have to come up, you know, because your mother is terrified. And he goes, oh, my God, yes. And so I remember he went up, and she got up and hugged him, and we all just stood there, and we were just like, it was just this sort of amazing moment that we were okay, you know, to this earthquake, and that his mother knew that she was okay, and he was so loving to her. I'll just never forget that experience. I don't know many people who would get down on their knees. We also did have the other experience of the big earthquake here. Sanchez Duarte was staying here from Mexico City, the artist, and a bunch of other people, and I was upstairs, and I went to go get pan dulce, and Juan Pablo had all this beautiful Mexican candelabras, you know, and it just all went and crashed, and we all went in the backyard. I was over at La Victoria, and the bread was just flowing, and it was so strange, and the street looked like a snake, you know, but the mission was just, you know, whoa. But when I got back, I had tons of pan dulce, you know, but everybody was in the backyard, because again, Celia was terrified, because she's from Mexico. But Juan Pablo just did this amazing thing. He got this cooler that had bologna and bread and all this stuff. He started making us all these sandwiches, you know, he was just like, he was on, you know, I mean, that's what I mean, he could just come through these things, you know, with this humor and this let's have a party, you know? So yeah, I thought I'd share that earthquake. We used to talk about that earthquake so many times when Papa and I, and how good those bologna sandwiches were.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Linda, for taking the time to reminisce about your friend and sharing some personal stories.
You're really welcome.
Thank you for listening to Radio Teco, the podcast of El Tecolote, California's longest-running bilingual community Latino newspaper. If you enjoyed listening to this episode and are looking for more of our content, please visit our website, eltecolote.org. And if you value bilingual storytelling and would like to support our next 50 years of community journalism, please consider making a donation or sign up to volunteer.